ജയം ശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ട ഓം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേംസഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻധാമിക്ക് മായപൂർധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരിധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരിധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരിധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പരമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണി നർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാത് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവ സാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമ സംകീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാ ഇതരതശ്ച അർത്ഥേഷു അഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാട് തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത് സൂരയാ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മ പ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാവരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തൽക്ഷണാൻ നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോ ഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹം സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാം യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിഥിതീർഷദാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനം ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്രമൂർത്തേ കലവേണു കൊണിതാദൃതാനേന്ദോഹ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭവാ മുരാരേർ മധുരിന്ന കനികാവി കാവി കാവി നമോം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഇതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീ ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമൽഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദീനന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണം പാപരേണമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസാം ഹരികതോ ഗീതം പുനാദിഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാഗാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയം വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മോഹം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, it's been a few weeks now since we talked about Ekadasha Skandam. So, just coming back to it again, we were talking about Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, beginning in the 7th chapter of Canto 11. The Srimad Bhagavatam, how Bhagavatam came to this world, it's a question always people ask, because Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled several Vedic literature, isn't it? He actually divided the Vedas into four, therefore he got the name as Vedavyas. And then he wrote, apart from the Vedic Vedas itself, after dividing them, he compiled the Upanishads and particularly later on the Puranas, Brahma Sutram, and so many other Vedic literature he compiled. So, but if you look back into the history, you will see, even prior to Vedavyasa arrival, Vedavyasa arrived much later, in relationship with the history of the Vedic culture, Vedavyasa is a recent personality. You see, Vedavyasa is not a very ancient personality compared to the history of the Vedic culture. Vedic culture goes to that far back behind. When did Vedic culture begin in this world? A question sometimes people ask. The answer to that question is, this culture began when the human society started the inquiry in this world. What was that inquiry? Inquiry is this. The inquiry from everyone in this world, there is only one inquiry. What is that? How to become happy here. Isn't it? So happiness is that what we are all searching after. Happiness is that what we are all searching after. There is some unhappiness inside. We are not feeling happiness in this present situation. Therefore, we are always looking for happiness. Now, this quest for happiness has begun from time immemorial, ever since human society existed here. So, going back in that direction, you can see that the first understanding among the human species was that, particularly among the great thinkers or the great sages, what we call them as the thinkers, the great personalities, the great sages, the first thing they thought was that they could obtain this happiness from this world. Obtain the happiness from this world. So in order to obtain the happiness from this world, they wanted to control things in this world. They wanted to control things in this world. But after a long time, they tried that. They understood that although we have put a lot of effort into it, things are not happening the way we want that to happen. The happiness was not there, in spite of the fact that they put a lot of effort to achieve happiness in this world. It is said that actually this inquiry process has happened in 2-3 different levels. If you look back into the history, you will see there that it has happened at two or three different levels. So the first level it happened was when they decided to control the material nature and to derive happiness from there. Only after a long time of experiments with the world outside, they realize that happiness is not possible to achieve in that way. It is then that they have moved on to the next level of searching for happiness. Next level for the searching for happiness. Because they have come to the conclusion that things are not happening although you have done your best in this world. Sometimes things go in the wrong direction. This realization, after all, they were also not, just like the modern history tells us, they were cavemen and they were they had no intelligence and all. That's how we present it in the history. But that is not true. In fact, those people are a lot more intelligent than us today. Their search was so deeper than a much deeper level. They realized very quickly that there is no happiness in this world you can achieve by your effort. So it is at that point they started thinking, what should we do to attain happiness? By adjusting the material world, by controlling the material nature and external forces, they couldn't reach the level of happiness. So they started thinking, what is the next stage where what we could look for happiness? It is at that time they started realizing that there must be higher living entities, especially the heavenly planets have come to their mind. The heavenly planets and the concept of heavenly planets occurred at that point. Also, they understood that there is, that particularly when we talk about heavenly planets, we have the knowledge about the desire trees, about the Kamadhenu and the who is capable of providing everything what we need. So these kind of realizations occurred to them, the sages, that they try to find out what is the way to get there to the heavenly planets. So from the Mother Earth, they started the inquiry. They were not satisfied. They couldn't find the happiness. Then they started looking for the higher planetary systems, Surgalokam, they call it. So in order to reach the Surgalokam, their inquiry began in such a way that everything that they found in this material nature, they gave a personal identity to them. They gave a personal identity to them. If you look into the history, you will see, first of all, they have been personifying the five material elements. Earth, water, air, ether, all these were personified. Sun, moon, all of them, personification. By glorifying them and by pleasing them, they realized that these powerful personalities who control these different material elements, they have a much higher existence. And it is they who live in the heavenly planets, and by reaching them, one can actually achieve the heavenly happiness in this, while being in this world. That is how Vedas comes in into the life of these personalities. So they've started austerities and penances. The results were that many of the Vedic hymns were revealed through them to them. They were revealed through them, and using those Vedic hymns, they started worshipping these different devatas or different entities. So that is why in the Vedic literature you will find there was something like 330 million demigods mentioned there. 330 million demigods. So originally the worship was centered around all these 330 million demigods. From then on, it brought down and down, and eventually it became the three major deities, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. The three major deities were worshipped after that. So along with this, if you look into some of the hymns in the Vedas, you will find Surga Gamo Yajeda, that if you have a desire for going to a heavenly planet, perform sacrifice. That's what it means. Surga Gamo Yajeda. So with this intention, in order to go to the heavenly planets, they started performing Vedic sacrifices. That is why Vedic sacrifices are much before than Vedavyasa Maharshi divided the Vedas. Even before that, Vedic sacrifices existed. Agnishtomam, Adiratram, Vajabeyam, like that, there is a list of them. Very, very elaborate arrangements for performing sacrifices in order to go to the heavenly planets. So this was the second level of search. The first level of search is the world outside. They realized that it is not possible to become happy in the external world. Then the inquiry went on further. They realized the existence of the heavenly planets and wanted to go there. Therefore, using the authority of the Vedic hymns, particularly Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam and Atharvanavedam. They have started glorifying those deities, and with their help, they started going on to the heavenly planet. Parasparam bhavayanda prema paramavapsyadha. In the Bhagavadam, in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find this. Devan bhavayadha nena te deva bhavayanduva parasparam bhavayanda prema paramavapsyadha. Krishna says, let these demigods and the ordinary human species, let them mutually support each other. The ordinary human species, let them perform sacrifices, please the demigods. Let the demigods give them the happiness what they need. So, many people started traveling to moving to heavenly planets and enjoying the heavenly planets. They enjoy heavenly planets for a very, very long time. That is why we have so much information about heavenly planets in the Vedic literature. So, after going to the heavenly planets, they realized one thing, that they can't stay there permanently. This was the next step in their realization. It's all right, they have worked very hard to get there. But after getting there, they realized it's not possible to stay there. They had to come back here again. After the pious activities or the power of the sacrifices was finished, they had to come back here from the heavenly planets, which you will see in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying there, Kshine punye martyalogam vishandi. That when the punyam is finished, you have to come back to the martyalogam, to the earthly planet again. So, this second level of inquiry also came to a stop now. Because they were thinking, we perform sacrifices here, go to the heavenly planets. When the pious activities results are finished, come back here. Again perform sacrifices, again go there. What kind of happiness is that? They also got tired of it. So, these sacrifices and going to the heavenly planets was their second level of inquiry. It is then that they started realizing that even after endeavoring for happiness, no permanent happiness is possible here. So these sages were very thoughtful people, highly thoughtful, and continuously searching after the truth. They decided that I think our line of inquiry has to change. Up to this point, they were thinking that the happiness is that what we should search after. Now, they have come to the understanding in a different way. They started thinking, is our understanding of ourselves correct? First of all, we think ourselves this body, and in the bodily level they were acting at that time. So now they have started questioning themselves, is this understanding of my identification with the body, is that correct? So this is where Vedas goes back to Vedantam. Vedanta philosophy comes at this point. That's why we call it as Vedantam, the end of knowledge. Because inquiry after the self has started at that point very seriously. Along with that, they also realized a certain very fundamental things in this world. What is that? They realized that even after working hard in this world, the result is not always directly proportional to your effort. It is always different. Sometimes you get happiness, sometimes you get distress, even after working here. So they came to the conclusion that God cannot be the reason for this. Because if there is a God, a personality, supreme person, controlling everything, He should not be partial to one. And He should be impartial in everything. So if we are getting some results, in spite of the fact that we have worked for happiness, if you are getting some opposite results, there must be a reason behind it. And that is how they came to the law of karma. They came to the conclusion of the law of karma. Because that is the only thing that made sense to them. That in spite of the fact that they put a lot of effort in one direction, in order to advance spiritual, in order to become happy, results were coming in the opposite direction. So they had put a lot of thoughts into it, and they started realizing that there is another factor behind everything, and that is the powerful law of karma. So the loss of karma, and when along with the loss of karma, they also understood another thing, that sometimes they noticed somebody who has done a lot of pious activities in this life, done everything properly, lot of charity performed, fed a lot of people, done a lot of good things in this world, and he is suffering at the time of death heavily. Physically suffering, mentally suffering, and he is dying in that. What could be the reason behind it? These are questions what we have to ask. Why? How come that I lived a very pious life? I did everything as I was told by the higher authorities. I have not hurt anybody. I have not cheated anyone. I lived a proper life. In spite of that, I am suffering in this world. Why? This question will come, isn't it? This is question. This is happening all the time. People are suffering sometimes. And sometimes you also notice someone who is doing all sorts of nonsensical activities in this world, cheating, lying, ripping off others and doing anything and everything just to make money and all kinds of things. And they seem to leave this world very happily also. So this contradiction made them to think a little bit deeper about it. It is then that they realized that our identity with the body is not the truth. That inside that, this thing called soul, which has been going through different bodies at different times, have acquired different vasanas and different results from that are manifesting in this particular body. So, the transmigration of the soul and the rebirth or whatever that is called and the loss of karma, these two factors have come into very strong existence in the Vedic tradition. This is what separates Vedic philosophy from all other philosophies in this world. Which one? This transmigration of the soul and the law of karma. And their powerful impact on us. Powerful impact on us. As I mentioned, that it doesn't make any sense when you analyze the life of people here, that the result or the happiness or the experiences are not according to what their activities in this life, that means it must have followed from some other lifetime. So that is why that is happening. So when this thing came, that the transmigration of the soul and the law of karma has come into effect, then they started realizing that the understanding of this body has to be different. Understanding of this body has to be different. It is in their research they found out, somehow from the Vedic hymns itself they understood, that is my perception of this myself as the self, is this correct? So you will see this example in the Vedic literature in many places. In Bhagavatam you will find in two or three places reference to the rope and the snake. Isn't it? The rope and the snake. When you see the rope in darkness, you misunderstand it for snake. Lord Brahma says this to Krishna. In the Brahma Stuti, you can read that. Brahma says to Krishna. So, mistaking the rope to the snake, as the snake. Similarly, they have also started thinking, I have mistakenly identified myself with the body instead of the soul. Instead of the soul. Imagine what a gross misunderstanding that is. What a gross misunderstanding is this. As soon as the light came and the darkness is gone, and you saw that it was not the rope, but it was not the snake, it was the rope, what impact it has on you? The same thing you misunderstood as the snake first. And the fear developed inside. The mind starts reacting to it. So many things happens. But as soon as you realized that it is not a snake, it is a rope, what happened? Immediately, your perception changed, your understanding changed, your mood changes. Everything changes, isn't it? Similarly, as soon as you realize that you are not this body, it is something different than this body, all this perception today what we have will also change. This understanding came to them, they experimented with it, they researched on that, and they found it to be true. And they realized, as soon as they move back to their true identity on the spiritual platform, the so-called distress goes away once for all, and it never once again falls back into the material consciousness. So this is how Vedanta philosophy has come to the last stage. And it is at this stage that Vedavyasa Maharshi, the most thoughtful person, what do they say about Vedavyas? Vyaso chishtam jagat sarvam. Whatever Vedavyas has eaten and whatever remnants he has thrown away, and that is what this world has got. Vyaso Chishtam, Jagat Sarvam. Everything in this world is Vedavyasa Maharshi's remnants. That's all. All these great souls whom we are talking about in this world, they are all taken something from Vedavyas, and that too Vedavyas remnants. So great personality was Vedavyas. So that Vedavyasa Maharshi, after compiling the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, Brahmasutram, everything, came to understanding that something is missing in life. And it is then that the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. So while compiling Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi had one thing in his mind. What was that? Everything I have found out and understood in other literature, I should bring that into Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the beauty of Bhagavatam. You can see this very, very clearly. If you sit down and take Srimad Bhagavatam in the hand and keep looking through, you will find these things. Just for example, Ramayanam is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? Two chapters in the ninth canto is Lord Ramchandra's story summarized into two chapters. Mahabharatam is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you take the whole of first canto, quite a big part of third canto is all from Mahabharatam stories, isn't it? All the Puranas are present in the Bhagavatam. Take for example, Malsi Puranam is there in one chapter. Vamana Puranam is there. Vamanamurti's appearance and all the pastimes. That is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Vamana Puranam, Malsi Puranam. Kurma Puranam is there. Lord Kurma's appearance and its pastimes. That is mentioned there. All the other major incarnations are mentioned there. Narasimha Puranam is there in the seventh canto through these two appearances of Narasimhadev and Prahlada's story. And if you look into the sixth canto, you will see the story of Rudrasura, which has come from the Vedas directly. After bringing and the tenth canto, a major part of it is coming from Vishnu Puranam, Skanda Puranam and Padma Puranam. That is what tenth canto is. So all the other Puranas have come to Bhagavatam. Ramayanam has come to Bhagavatam. Mahabharatam has come to Bhagavatam. At the end, Vedavyasa Maharshi decided that let Canto 11 take the Upanishads. You see? Let Canto 11 take the Upanishads. So in Canto 11, Ekadasha Skandam, generally it is referred as Ekadasha Skandam. And sometimes it's also referred as Mukti Skandam. Mukti Skandam means the Skandam in reference to liberation. So in Ekadasha Skandam, it is the Upanishad's knowledge that is summarized. So everything in the Vedic literature you will find in the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is packed in such a nice way that you can see and experience the bliss of all the other Puranas and the Upanishads so beautifully explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, while studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we must always remember that Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Bhagavatam on the desire of Sri Narada Maharshi. This Narada Maharshi instructed him to do so. And this Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but Krishna. Krishna himself is in the Bhagavatam. Uddhava asked Krishna that why don't you stay back in this world for many more generations to come? Let them also see you as I have the opportunity to see you and serve you. Krishna's answer to that was, if you read in the Padma Puranam, you will find the answer is there. Uddhava is talking about this in the Padma Puranam. Uddhava says there that Tene Vangmayi Murti. Vangmayi Murti means Krishna in the form of words. Vangmayi. Vangmayi Murti is Bhagavatam. So Krishna in the form of words is Srimad Bhagavatam. Tene Vangmayi Murti. Then Tirodhaya Pravishtoham Srimad Bhagavadarnavam. Then when I disappear from this world, Uddhava, I will not go like that. I will leave myself in Srimad Bhagavatam. Search for me there. You will find me there. This was the final words from Krishna to Uddhava. And Uddhava has mentioned this in the Padma Puranam so that people understand the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this Bhagavatam, what actually does to us? What it does to us? What it does to us is the deeper you absorb in the Bhagavatam, it will wake you up. Wake up from what? That's the question, isn't it? There is a verse in the Bhagavatam which keeps coming up very often. In the Bhagavatam, you will find this verse. It is spoken by Kapila Vasudev to Devahuti Devi. It is spoken by Narada Maharshi to King Puranjana in Puranjana's story. And again, it appears twice in the Canto 11. There's one verse. That's what it... And that verse is such a powerful verse in the sense that it gives you the message of Bhagavatam very nicely. What does it say? Arteshu avidyamanepi samsrater na nivartate dhyayato vishayanasya sote anarthagamo yadam. Krishna's codified words. That's how you can call it. The codified way Krishna has put it. If you take the book and read that verse, you will not probably capture the message in there, because it is such a subtle subject. Krishna, whatever Krishna has spoken in Ekadasham, is subtle and subtle and more subtle. And because it is so subtle, sometimes we don't understand it. We will go on the surface and either we understand a little bit and we'll skip. But if only we understand the deeper side of it, you can understand what Krishna is talking about. Let's look at that verse a little bit. Arteshu avidyamanebi samsrader na nivartade. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Uddhava, it is like this. Dhyayado vishayanasya swapne anarthagamo yadaham. In swapnam, in deep sleep state, in dream state, when you are in the dream state, you are experiencing the dream state as real as you are experiencing the vacant state, isn't it? Just now we are in the vacant state, so-called vacant state, we'll say. So in this vacant state, you are experiencing this world. And somehow or the other, a very, very deep understanding has gone inside us that this is the reality. Is it not? That the vacant state is the reality. But when you go into dream state, what's happening there is that you have left your body, you have left your senses here. You're not experiencing anything through the senses. Everything is on the mental platform, through the mind. And through the mind, when you are living there in the dream world, for you, everything is real at that time. Is it not? Everything is real. In the dream state, you can suffer as much as you suffer in the vacant state. You may argue that, oh, nothing has happened to me. But that's when you come back to the vacant state. But while you are in the dream state, when you are experiencing any serious effect of the dream state, you are not conscious of anything, of the external world, nor about the body. Body is lying there. But you are crying in this dream state of such a bad dream that has hit you. Majority of instances, it is the misery that you experience. Rarely you get some glimpse of happiness also in the dream state. Krishna is saying there one important point. If you put this into your head and churn it as long as you can, it will give you a lot of strength to see what Krishna is making the point. Krishna is saying there, when you are in the dream state, you are as much a part of that dream state, very much a part of that. But as soon as you come back to the vacant state, you start saying, oh, I was in a dream, isn't it? You start saying that I was experiencing a dream. Sopne anarthagamo yadha. That anartham, the miseries that you have experienced in the dream state, will leave you as soon as you leave the dream state and comes to the vacant state. At that point you can say that I was in a dream. Otherwise not. So, similarly, Krishna is saying another important point here. What Krishna is saying is, Arteshu avidyamanebi samsidir na nivartate. What it means is that in the dream world, you were experiencing the world through the mind. Similarly, in your vacant state, all you are doing is you are experiencing the world through senses. That's the only difference. in the vacant state, you are experiencing the world through senses. Please get this into your mind strongly, that you have somehow given too much importance to this vacant state. But Krishna is saying, in the dream state, you are messing around with the mind. In the vacant state, you are messing around with the senses. Neither in the vacant state nor in the dream state, you are properly situated. This is the point Krishna is making. Neither in the dream state nor in the vacant state, you are properly situated. There is a world of the mind. You are influenced by the world of the mind. Here, you are influenced by the world of the senses. Now, as we started this evening, I mentioned this. First, the sages went outside looking for the happiness. Isn't it? They didn't find it. Then the inquiry progressed, went on to the heavenly planets. They didn't make it. Then the inquiry started looking inwards, looking for the soul. So you can see that how far the modern science has to travel to come to this point. They are so far behind still. They are still thinking outside there is happiness in the moon, in the Mars or Saturn or Venus, or wherever they want to go and looking for happiness. That even looking inwards haven't come yet to their mind. All this has been done long ago. This research has been done long ago by the sages, and their conclusion was that that is not the place for looking for happiness. It is after many, many lifetimes of search that they have come to this understanding that the search has to be inwards. So that's how they shut everything, the mind, the senses, everything. They shut it completely and turned inwards and started looking for the soul. This is spiritual inquiry has begun. Therefore, materialistic way of thinking and spiritual way of thinking are on two different planes. There is no point in trying to bring it together and comparing it. It's meaningless. Because materialist is searching in the external world in his own way through the matter. Whereas the spiritualist has already discarded all that long ago. Many thousands of years ago. This has gone from their calculations. And they've already come to the point of understanding that the real search has to be inwards, inside. And therefore, the inquiry has come and their results are also different. The results were different. They hardly gave any importance to the search outside. Searching outside has no meaning. This was their point. So, coming to this point, Krishna is saying now, Dhyayato Vishayanasya, that when you are in the world of the senses, what do you do normally? You are always busy with the sensual activities, isn't it? Basically, we can all easily understand this. As soon as you get up in the morning, the eyes start looking for something, the ears start looking for something, then the next important one, the king of all the senses inside the mouth, he is demanding things. So starting with your bed coffee or whatever that feeds that sense first, and then you want the newspaper and television, and this is the general person's life, I'm saying. So what does it mean? It means Krishna is saying jayava vishayanasya, that vishayam, sense objects, is the senses and sense objects, that is the world of jagrat state or vacant state. And this world, what we create through our senses, is called samsaram, material existence. It's called samsaram or material existence. So, when you woke up from dream state and came to the jagrat state, and you realized that the dream state has also no meaning, similarly, Krishna says, when you wake up from this vacant state to another state, you will realize that this state, what we are talking about, is also meaningless. This is the important point. Arteshu avidyamanebi samsradir na nivartade, Krishna says. Why? Dhyayato vishayanasya sopne anarthagamo yada. You can look for this verse when you have time at home. You will see this mentioned throughout Bhagavadam, this verse appearing again, again and again. Because the message is so important. You see, it is so difficult to convince someone that this world is
not a reality, isn't it? How can anybody say? They'll say, oh no, that's a dream, but this is a real thing, they'll say. Is it not? So, in order to understand the spiritual realization has to come, we have to have this basics very clear in our head. That artesha vidyamane bi samsardirna nivartade dhyayado vishayanasya sotne anarthagamo yedha. That in two lines, Krishna summarized everything. And there is pages and pages of commentaries on these verses in order to get this point across to us, because most of the people find it very difficult to accept this statement. Because then they'll say, oh, Bhagavatam is wrong, I don't know what Krishna is saying, and I don't understand, neither who says to me this. Because this illusion is such a powerful thing in our head, that unless we accept what Krishna says there, we cannot go next step. We cannot go further from there. This is the very principle of the Ekadasha Skandam. So, Ekadasha Skandam, when we hear, so many things we have to bear in mind, that it's not something that you can just understand with your mind and intelligence and analyze, scrutinize it. It is on a higher platform. It's all spoken. On a higher, much more subtle level, it is spoken. That's where the difficulty is. Just like, while reading Bhagavatam, you will find so many glorifications there, isn't it? So many glorifications from different devotees, Kunti Devi, Vishnu Vidamaha, and Uddhava, Akrura, Vritrasura, Ambarish Maharaj, many, many, many personalities talking about glorifying Krishna. Why these glorifications are important? I don't know whether you have thought about this. Generally, the person who does not think deep enough about these things, what they will do is, they will read Bhagavatam and they will take what they have understood. Isn't it? What they have understood. Like the stories in the Bhagavatam. That's very nice. So they will understand the story. When they start reading the glorification, they start thinking, oh, what is this glorification going on like this? And they leave that behind. They leave that behind. They can't understand it. But let me explain that why this glorification is important. When we want contact with Krishna, Krishna has given us certain tools for that, isn't it? What are they? The senses, which means the body, then the mind, then the intelligence. This is all what we have got with us. To relate with anything in this world, including Krishna, we have got these things only. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence. Out of these three things, when you pay your obeisances to Krishna, that is with the body and the senses. That's how you are paying your obeisances to Krishna. Superior to that is paying obeisances with the mind. Superior to paying obeisances with the body is paying obeisances with the mind. How do you pay obeisances with the mind? Absorbing Krishna into the mind all the time. That is obeisances to Krishna. See, your example, if your mind is completely absorbed in Krishna, in Krishna's activities, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's instructions, Bhagavad Gita, Ekadasha Skandam, that means you are offering a higher respect to Krishna than on a bodily level. You see the point? That when you study Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita and your mind is completely absorbed in that, you are offering respects to Krishna even on a higher platform than with the body. When you go higher than that, and if you use your intellectually, you are also able to serve Krishna, that is what is this glorification in the Bhagavatam is. So, because it is glorifying Krishna directly, using completely your intelligence, by those great devotees who are so pure in their consciousness, therefore, this glorification is even higher than glorifying with the mind. You understand? That the paying obeisances with the body is the first thing. That is a very basic thing. Higher than that, because sometimes, as you know, we while paying obeisances also, our mind could be on something else. Isn't it? Mind could be thinking, where did I leave my car keys? In this pocket or this pocket? It goes like that. So while paying obeisance, I'll be checking it. Yeah, did I leave the car key there? So that is not a very deeper understanding or deeper respects to Krishna. So when that goes away and you come to the mental platform and mind gets absorbed in that, and paying your obeisances through the mind is a superior thing than paying obeisances with the body. Even higher than that is what we are reading in the Bhagavadam, where they are glorifying Krishna through their knowledge. Through their knowledge. That is why when you study these glorifications, you will understand, get closer understanding of Krishna. It is only through these glorifications, and no matter who it is, you will see that glimpse of knowledge shining through in their glorification. Whether it is Dhruva Maharaj, whether it is Prahlada, whether it's Gopis, whether it's Ambarish, whether it's Mitrasura, whether it's Uddhava, whether it's Bhishma, whether it's Parikshit, whether it's Yudhishthir, whether it is Narada Maharshi, you will see all of them, when they glorify Krishna, there will be at least one or two verses simply referring to the knowledge side of Krishna. Why? Because it's coming through the knowledge, glorification. That's a realization. That is from realization, the intelligence actually combined with that, they are able to speak like that. So this is the reason why glorifications in the Bhagavadam we should study and we should absorb it and take it seriously, because through that we have get a bit closer to Krishna. With the body we are never closer, are we? We are where we are. Body we don't go very closer. With the mind a little bit more closer. But with the intelligence, a lot more closer to Krishna. Why? Indriyani pararahu indriyebhya param mana manasastu para buddhi buddhistu paradastu sam. That superior to the senses is the mind. Superior to the mind is the intelligence. Higher than the intelligence is the soul, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So you can see that mind, senses, intelligence, they all have something to do with the Krishna consciousness. At some point it will all be helpful for us. So we stopped a few weeks ago, where we were talking about the material elements, isn't it? The material elements. Why material elements? Earth, water, air, ether and fire. So ultimately we saw that the element, what water has to tell us, what fire has to tell us, those things we have seen. Now, before we move on further, we have to capture the background of these instructions again. That the purpose of all this instruction was only one thing. What was that? Purpose was this, that to understand the principle of Guru Tattva. Guru Tattva means Dattatreya Maharshi is teaching us how to find a spiritual master and who all can be spiritual masters. These are all the things what we have to learn from Dattatreya Maharshi. These personalities didn't come here, nor Krishna talked about them without any purpose. The purpose was that somehow or the other to get into our head this principle of Guru, the principle of Guru Tattvam. In order to get that into our head, Krishna is using this example so that allowing us to think through it and see what is spiritual life. Our mind is such a nonsense that it only wants black and white instructions. If somebody tells you something black and white, gives it in writing, 1, 2, 3, 4, we'll just follow it like sheep. That's all what we want. But spiritual life is never like that. This is why Krishna wants us to change this, our mentality of looking for instructions all the time. He says, inside, I am sitting inside, sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtam. I am sitting inside to guide you. Why you have this confusion? This is Krishna's point. So Krishna is always, while talking to Uddhava, he says there, Uddhava, Dattatreya Maharshi found so many gurus in this world when he started searching. He found everything in this world as a guru. Isn't it? He found everything in this world as a guru, a spiritual master. They all had something to instruct him. From the water he learned, from the air he learned. And we saw what all he had to say about from air what he learned, from water he learned. All what is required is openness. Open the heart to receive the message. Receptivity, they call it. Receptivity. At the moment, we are not receptive. What it is we have heard something here and there, bits and pieces. And then somebody comes and tells us, this is the only way, this is the only way. And we start thinking that that's the only way, there's no other way. Sometimes we get into this misunderstanding. It's not like that. Spiritual life, it's not like that. One who has kept his eyes, ears open, he has so much things to learn from this world. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Uddhava, this earthly planet itself, where you are living now, is in school from where you can develop spiritually. That opportunity is there. So now, what we are going to see here now, in the Bhagavadam, at this point, is this what Krishna has talked about it with Yadu and Avadhuta. You will see, I mentioned this before also, but I'll reiterate once again. Atmano Guru Atmaiva. First thing to understand is the soul himself is the spiritual master. Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada. That this is very special with human body. This understanding of making spiritual advancement from one's own soul is only available in the human body. It's not available in any other body. So Krishna is stressing that point when he starts instructing Uddhava. Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada. He says, this is a special facility I have offered in the human body. Purushasya Visheshada. Why? When he says here, Yat Pratyaksham Anumanabhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade. That here, in this body, with this soul inside and the intelligence, Pratyaksham Anumanam. Pratyaksham means direct perception. Direct perception, he can observe things like the Dattatreya Maharshi has done here. Anumanam, he has also come to some conclusions from that. And Shreyaso Anuvindade. There are four ways one can receive knowledge and develop on that. What are they? One is Pratyaksham, direct perception. Then Anumanam is inference. Inference, you know what it means. That something is happening there, from that you can infer. You can conclude that this must be there. Just like when smoke is coming out, you can say the fire is there. That's why smoke is coming out. So similarly, while observing in this world also, you can say that if so many things are happening behind that, there is another energy behind it. There's a source behind it, and that is the soul. And that conclusion is coming through this inference process. Then the third one is Agamam. Agamam means the Shastram telling you certain things. Directly accepting Shastram and taking it from Shastram. And the fourth one is Aptokti. Aptokti means realized souls, when they talk, their instructions. So these are the four major things. Pratyaksham, Anumanam, Agamam, Aptokti. Four things through which the knowledge can come to us. And one who is receptive, he can make progress on the spiritual side, Krishna is saying here, simply by absorbed in these things. Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada Pratyaksham Anumanabhyam Shreyasa Anuvindade. This is the important point. So, as I mentioned in the last time also, in the last class, that when it comes to spiritual things, because the spiritual understanding comes in a different way. In a different way. For example, I mentioned that you can test the power of somebody physically, how strong he is, isn't it? Either you ask him to beat you, or you give him or accept a punch from him and see how strong one person is than the other person. So that you can physically test it and see. One's knowledge of a language you can test. A scholar can test the knowledge of somebody, how knowledgeable he is in a particular language. That you can test somebody. But spiritual knowledge, you can't test like that. It cannot be tested in that way. If you see, in the Bhagavadam, when we begin Srimad Bhagavadam, what happened was, Lord Brahma sat there, with his eyes, ears open, everything, but nothing was happening, was it? Nothing was happening. Then eventually what happened was, Krishna had to come, sit inside Brahma, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya. In the Bhagavadam it's said like that. So that Muhyandi, illusion gone when Krishna entered inside and enlightened Brahma. Similarly, Bhagavadam is saying, Ekadasha Skandam particularly, don't try to understand Ekadasha Skandam through mind and intelligence. All that is required is just to sit and listen. That's all. Simply by listening, one day when Krishna feels that let this person understand what I am saying, then it will get into the mind. Krishna will get inside and he will do that work for us. So simple is this Bhagavatam in that sense. Often we think, oh, I have tried to understand Bhagavatam this way, that way. No, it's not possible to understand. That is the point. Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly this Ekadasha Skandam, is not possible to understand that way. Even if you try very hard, many of the statements in the Bhagavatam is beyond our comprehension or beyond our understanding. So difficult it is, because it is more and more subtle. The subtle it gets, the gets more difficult to capture the point. We are people, even spoken in a gross level, it doesn't hit us. It doesn't have any impact on us. We are still asked questions. But here, Krishna is presenting some science related with the soul, and that too, in a most subtle way. That means the only way it can have any impact on us is when Krishna entered Brahma's heart, similarly Krishna enters our heart and start making us understand these things. Otherwise, it's not possible. So, in the Bhagavatam itself, there is example to it. I'll come to that, how that has happened. So, we were talking about, this has to go from heart to heart, from one heart to another heart. And when we say heart, it's not that talking about this mechanical heart we are talking about. When we talk about heart, it means the presence of the consciousness inside, which is generally referred on the right-hand side. Kṛdaya kuhara madhye, they call it. Kuhara means there's a cave inside. In that cave, the presence of the soul, because it's not a material thing, you can't pinpoint it to a particular place. But due to its presence there, it's present all over the body in the form of consciousness. That's what it is. Hṛdaya kuhara madhye. So, the presence of this, that soul inside Krishna's part and parcel, has to release, get that enlightenment from Krishna. It is then that you can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it is mentioned here. So, where in the Bhagavatam you find this? You can look at it this way. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinarada Maharshi is the main personality, isn't it? Who is always instructing so many personalities spiritually. So, first he tried to instruct spiritual knowledge to some great personalities, to sannyasis. He went and instructed some sannyasis. Who are there? Dashaprajapati's children. You know, Hariyashwas and Shabalashwas. You'll find in the sixth canto their story. They have taken sannyas and they were going to perform penances in the forest. Narada Maharshi went up to them and told them, look, he started talking about the soul, about the spiritual matters. It didn't work with them. They went to the forest still. It didn't work with them. So Narada Maharshi thought, this is such a simple thing about spiritual life. It's not happening to them. Why? He started analyzing himself. So then Narada Maharshi thought, perhaps instead what I am doing, mistake is that I am capturing such people who have practiced spiritual life a long time, but the message hasn't got through to them yet. So he decided to go and approach someone who is much younger. Much younger. In that process, he caught hold of whom? He caught hold of Dhruva Maharaj. And he told Dhruva Maharaj many things, but still it didn't work to Dhruva Maharaj. You may think, how come? Dhruva Maharaj went and saw Krishna, isn't it? He pleased Krishna, and Krishna was so pleased with him, offered him 36,000 years of rule of this planet, position in the Dvailoka planet. But this is not spiritual. Again, that's what you have to remember. It's not spiritual. So Narada Maharshi was disappointed with the result what Dhruva Maharaj got. Imagine, he saw Krishna. Seeing Krishna is not the ultimate goal. Krishna may reveal to many people in this world with intense devotion. It can happen. Sometimes Krishna will disappear also after some time. So that itself is not the goal. And Dhruva Maharaj talks about it when he comes back. The mistake I made, he says. By seeing Krishna, I did not ask for what I should have asked him. You see, the deal wasn't very good for Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj didn't get the best deal in that. So he felt disappointed actually. He felt disappointed. So it was then that Narada Maharshi thought, I am explaining such an important thing and such a simple thing. Why it's not clicking in their head? Why it's not clicking there? So then he decided, let me try with somebody else who is not even born. Yeah? Who is not even born. So he goes and catch hold of Kayadhu, Hiranyakashipu's wife, and takes her to the ashram. And while talking to Hiranyakashipu's wife, Kayadhu, Narada Maharshi very well knew nothing was going to happen. But he knew very well, inside the mother's womb, there's a child there who may have some effect on due to this. And try to see this. Prahlada, inside, has not even developed intelligence. Prahlada's senses were not fully developed. Prahlada's mind was not there to understand anything, but it worked for Prahlada. Whatever Narada Maharshi has instructed Prahlada while he was in the mother's womb, the whole thing has come out when the child came out with him. So what does that mean? It means spiritual knowledge and spiritual realization is not something you can capture with the mind, capture with the intelligence, capture with the senses. Sometimes you see in this world some people who have executed spiritual life very well, but at the end nothing happened. They left this world in total frustration. There are cases like that. In total frustration and also in a total misery, they left this world. And then you start thinking, how come he has done everything? He has chanted his 16 rounds. He has done all the rules and regulations, followed very strictly. Did all the service what he has been told to do. Everything has been done. But still at the end, the result wasn't there. Why? On the other hand, you also find sometimes, some people, they were very acted in the wrong way, many instances. They didn't execute spiritual life very seriously. They were addicted to sometimes even bad habits. So many things they have done. But still, somehow, the message clicked for them. The message, they got it. So this is an important thing in spiritual life, getting the right message into the head. Simply working with the body and the mind is no good, unless this message is inside properly. So that's what you will find here, that Ekadasi Skandam, when you read and when you start understanding, you should keep these things in mind. Otherwise, easily you will get thinking that we have this nature in us that somebody have told us and some books we have read that this is how you should regulate your life. That's fine. You should regulate your life. That's important. But just by doing that regulation alone doesn't mean that you are coming to the point. So that's where this understanding is necessary. In spite of executing everything properly, it may not happen, but sometimes it can happen the other way also. Reason for that, I'll come to it, why it happens like that. So here, important thing is that spiritual knowledge mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we must simply hear that what is spoken and read through these verses again and again as much as you can. Because you will never know when it will hit you. Ekadasi Skandam's beauty is that when these verses will strike you, you don't know it. So therefore, we are saying here that when one great personality, one great sage was instructing a lot of people about spiritual life. So there was one person who was very, very learned in the group of listeners who are listening there. So he was saying to the sage, who was a realized soul, that why do you instruct everybody like this freely? Because many of them don't know anything. They're just not educated enough. They don't know the Shastra. They don't know the spiritual side of life. They're just coming and sitting and listening to you. and you are talking to them all these things, but why? Does it have any benefit from that? So this person said, look, this is the only thing I know. I don't know anything else. This is all I know. What I have understood and I have realized this, and I am just trying to tell them to others. And this realization is very simple. Very simple it is. If it is simple because his heart is open. So he finds that it is very simple. And I received it in a very simple way from others. And I like to transmit that to others also in the simple way. The only thing required is that person should keep his heart open. He was not convinced. The man who heard this, he said, how can that happen? So one day what happened was, the sage was wandering through the street. He was wandering through the street. So nearby, there was a big mango grove, hundreds of mango trees in that. So in the season time, all the mango trees will be full of mangoes. So normally what they do, they rent the mango grove to someone. They'll rent it to someone. And somebody will take charge of this mango grove and he will employ someone to watch the mangoes till they get ripe. And one day they'll come and pluck all the mangoes and take it and sell it. And they have to pay a small amount to the owner of the garden. Just renting it out, the whole garden. Just like here also we do that, isn't it? like these allotments like things, something like that you can say. So, in the mango grove, this person who has rented the mango grove, he has employed one boy to watch the mangoes so that others won't come and thief. Apart, because first-class mangoes, when you see, you also like to get one of it, isn't it? So he has employed someone to keep an eye on the garden. But there was always this problem with the monkeys. They will come, that you can't do anything about it. So what they have done, he has told this boy, look, you have this catapult, you know, catapult. One like this, which you keep a stone and pull the rubber, a strip and leave it, and the stone will go and hit the place where it is needed. So in order to drive the monkeys away, this boy had kept a catapult with him and a bunch of stones with him. And as soon as the monkeys come, he'll start using the catapult and throw the stones at them. One day it so happened in that process, when he threw the stones from the catapult, it went and hit a monkey on a very sensible place in the body, and the monkey died. Monkey died, and the monkey fell down there, dropped dead. So all the other monkeys came there to join the mourning. They all sat there and they were all crying. So this sage went up to them and started talking to the monkeys. What was he saying to them? He was saying to them, why do you cry? You are not this body. He was saying to the monkeys, you are not this body. And body has come due to past activities, and one day this body will leave you and you will also die. I will also die. Why you should lament on this? He was instructing the knowledge what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam to the monkeys. So the other person, the scholar who has studied everything, he says to the sage, why are you going and talking all these things to the monkeys? So the sage said, I have been talking to many people. Some of them captured the message, but many were like the others, couldn't capture it. Similarly, among the monkeys also, some of them may capture this message. You see? Why? Because this realization is not based on the body, not based on the mind, not based on the senses, not based on the intelligence. It is directly from soul to soul. From Krishna's, it comes, and if Krishna wants, it can happen to anyone. Doesn't matter. That is why, throughout Bhagavatam, if you study, you will see, some of the personalities we are talking about, they are not even human beings, isn't it? You talk about, if you talk in the Ramayanam, you will see there, Sambhadi, Jadayu, Vibhishana, he was a Rakshasa, isn't it? Vibhishana was a Rakshasa. then you have got the examples of Shabari. She was a lady from the hunter caste. So how did they all become realized, self-realized? This is a question to ask, isn't it? They didn't study any Shastram. But just the impact of that spiritual knowledge they received from the right person, and their heart was so simple that they could accept it without any questioning further. Our mind is so complex that we will only accept it if it comes through the way we want that to come through. If you read Bhagavad Gita, you will find this. Krishna is talking about this very clearly. What does Krishna say? Idam tume guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave. Krishna says a word, anasuyave. Have you noticed that? In the Bhagavad Gita, this word, anasuyave. Anasuyave means one who is free from envy. Now you may wonder why Krishna is talking about us like this, that you are all envious snakes. Is that what Krishna is saying? No, that's not what Krishna is saying. Because you not understood that word. Asuya means envy. Anasuya means one who is free from envy. Now Krishna is saying to Arjuna, idam tume guhyadamam. This confidential knowledge I will reveal unto you because pravakshyami, I will talk to you. Why? Anasuyave, you are free from envy. Normally, Arjuna is not envious. That was his qualification. But why he used that word free from envy? He could have said like this, you are free from lust, or you could have free from anger, or you are free from greed. So many things you could have said. Why he used the word anasuyave, free from envy? Reason for that is this, that anasuyave means one who does not insist that only if I get through this line, I will accept this as the knowledge. Arjuna was so open in his mind that if Krishna is saying something, he will accept it without any doubt about it. This was the fortunate situation of Arjuna. And that is why Arjuna is called Anasuyave. This understanding of Arjuna, that I will accept knowledge because Krishna is my authority. Krishna is God talking to me. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is talking to me, and I don't need to question this. I can accept it. That's Anasuyave. Just like Uddhava did here, isn't it? Uddhava also accepted, Krishna, you are the authority. What you say is the truth. Because on this subtle level, what can we do? What research can we do? It's such a subtle topic, this science of Krishna consciousness. Ekadasha Skandham particularly is so subtle, very difficult to capture with our mind and intelligence. The only way it can happen is if the surrender and acceptance of Krishna is complete. When the acceptance is complete, when Krishna feels that the person has come to me and is accepting me completely, then the knowledge comes. So that's what it is, that the story we're talking about, that mind and intelligence cannot capture this. By adjusting the mind and intelligence, Ekadasha Skandham cannot be understood. Then I also mentioned last time that the qualifications for spiritual life you may have. Remember, ability to discriminate things and detachment from material life and shamam damam tiriksha, the different qualifications, and also above everything else, the intense desire for liberation. All these things you may have, you may have practiced it, but that also cannot be guaranteed in any way. That itself is the qualification. So, once to the same sage, one person said, come up to him and told him that, great, my dear sage, my dear Maharshi, whatever you are telling is true, but it is very difficult, he said, to understand, to absorb this, he said. You know what the sage replied? See, if you keep on saying this difficult, you will have to take one more birth to get out of this saying difficult. That's how difficult it is, he said. If you keep on saying everything is difficult, you will have to take one birth more to get out of the saying difficult. You see? So that's the way it is. This is something very difficult to explain also, because it's something which you have to experience yourself. That so many things Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, And we are busy in researching that, isn't it? We want to find out, is this all true? Is this matching with the science? That's the first thing we do. And then if it is matches with the science, then it's okay. If it's not matching with the science, then we have to, we have to look at it once again and make a conclusion. This is no good. This is not spiritual life. So that's why Krishna is saying all these things here, that if there is, there is mercy from Krishna, everything is possible. First of all, we have to have that faith in Krishna's words. That's why when Bhagavatam was summarized, you will find there, Tolkarunye pravarte ka ivanahi gurur logavrte bibhuman sarvakranda bibhumer nahi chalati tadam salkshamam shikshayayam. Tolkarunye pravarte, only when Krishna's mercy comes, all this understanding of Ekadasi Skandam will come. Ka ivanahi gurur logavrte bibhuman. That when Uddhava says to Krishna that how come Dattatreya Maharshi understood all these things from the Mother Earth? I never understood anything like that, Uddhava is saying. So, the answer to that is Tolkarunye pravate ka ivanahi gurur logavrate vibhumen sarvakranda vibhumer nahi jaladidadam salkshamam shikshayayam. That if I have to learn something from Mother Earth, all these qualities, Titiksha, we spoke about Mother Earth's tolerance level. How come Dattatreya Maharshi captured that? Uddhava didn't capture. Krishna says the reason for that is Dattatreya Maharshi understood the principle of Guru Tattva properly. That he has open mind. Everyone in this world is a guru if you approach them in the right way. There is something to get from everybody. That is how open Dattatreya Maharshi was in his dealings with the world. When Dattatreya Maharshi was interacting with the world, he was always thinking, what is there, God, for me to learn from this person or from this particular living entity or from the material element? That's how open he was in his heart. So this receptivity is an important thing in spiritual life. Unless one is receptive, it will not happen. So, therefore it says there that if there is Krishna's mercy, immediately it will click. And the mercy will come when the person is very simple inside, not complicated. So, this is the process. So, in the Bhagavadam, when we look at it this way, Vritrasura was going to leave the body, isn't it? So what did Vritrasura say there at that time? It's a beautiful example in the Bhagavadam. Ajada paksham ivamadaram khaga sanyam yatha valsadara kshutartha priyam priyeva vyashidam mishanna mano aravindaksha didrakshade tvam. This is the word, final words from Vritrasura. Vritrasura says, is addressing Krishna, saying to Krishna, I've come to that state now that I'm not waiting for anything else. I'm not waiting for anything else. My heart is now ready to receive you in this way. How? Ajada baksham ivam adaram khagaha. That when the when the birds go away, leaving their babies in the nest, they go out looking for food. So the whole day they go out looking for food to bring home in the evening to the babies. So while coming back, the babies will be waiting at home for the mother and father to come back. So when they are waiting, they are always looking. They'll come out of the nest and look. Have they come? Have they brought anything for us to eat? Because they are hungry by now. So while waiting, in their mind, what goes through? Only one thing they are thinking about. What's that? About their parents, father and mother. Nothing else, isn't it? In their world, nothing else exists except the father and mother to bring the food for them. That's why ajada baksham iva mataram khagaha. Ajada baksham means they haven't got the wings yet. So they are thinking about their mother. Only through their mother they get fed. Otherwise not. So the mother has to come. They are constantly thinking about the mother in their heart, in their mind. Stanyam yadha valsadara kshudhartham. When the calf is being fed by from the cow. The cow is anxious to feed the calf. And normally they tie the calf away and in the evening they bring the calf and allow the calf to drink the milk first. So when the calf comes and starts sucking the milk from the udder, profusely the milk starts flowing from inside. Why? Because of that affection for the calf. The mother is thinking about the calf whole day. The calf is thinking about the mother whole day. Stanyam yadha valsatara chutartaham. Similarly, Vrutrasura is saying, I am also in that situation now. Nothing else I am thinking about except getting back to you. Priyam priyevo vishidam vishannaha. That just like a young couple, the husband has gone away on business and the wife is waiting at home for the husband to return. How anxiously she waits all the time when somebody knocks at the door, she checks if the husband has come back. So with that thought, she stays at home. Similarly, Uttarasura says there, Mano Aravinda Achadadrakshade Tvam. My mind is after you in that way. So these examples are given in the Bhagavadam to show that the intensity of their inquiry for Krishna or their attachment for Krishna is so strong that they, unless when you get to that state, only then Krishna recognizes that situation. Krishna sees that this person's heart is ready to receive me. He is waiting for me to come. And then Krishna comes. That's the point when Krishna comes. So this is an important point, that receptivity. So one who knows these things, he won't close his mind. There is a technical term called Jagadguru, isn't it? Jagadguru means one who is the spiritual master of the whole world. This word Jagadguru can be used in two different ways. In one sense, one who is the spiritual master of the whole world, that's Jagadguru. The another meaning is one who has accepted the whole world as his spiritual master, that's also Jagadguru. One who has accepted the whole Jagat as his guru, he's also a Jagadguru. So in two ways you can mention this word, Jagadguru. One who is the spiritual master of the whole world, he is Jagadguru. Similarly, like we say, Krishnam Mande Jagadgurum. Krishnam is Jagadguru. He is the Guru, Jagadguru for the whole universe, creation. There is other, Dattatreya Maharshi is also a Jagadguru. Why? He has accepted the whole Jagat. Jagat means the whole universe as his Guru. And he is taking instructions from. He is also a Jagadguru. So, a person like that will have plenty to learn. He will have something to learn from Lord Ramachandra and he will have something to learn from Ravana also. He has something to learn from Ravana also. Not only from Ramachandra. Only I learn from Ramachandra. I won't learn anything from Ravana. No. From Ravana also there is something to learn for a person who is looking for spiritual life. Now, why it is important like this, it's all spoken, is that the sometimes when we say things, we mistake it, mistakenly understand things. We take it in the wrong way. And that is the important point here. For example, I mentioned, I think, this story before. A school teacher was teaching at school. And he told the children that you shouldn't give pain to any other living being. If you do that in the next life, because that's the language they understand, in the next life, you will get that body and that particular animal will give you the same pain in the next life. Say, the children were always fond of giving pain to other living entities, isn't it? Like the dogs or other snakes and things like that. So one day the teacher went and told in the class to the children, he was trying to teach them in their level that don't give pain to any living entity, don't throw stones at the dogs, don't throw stones at the other living entities. He taught everything just before lunch. So after explaining why he should not give pain to other living entities, he thought that they have understood everything. So at lunchtime, he came out of the classroom and he started just walking through the grounds. When he was walking through the ground, he saw one boy who was in the class while he was talking about it. has taken a stone, big stone in his hand, and he was hammering it on a frog. He has found one frog in the water, and he found some pleasure in throwing the stones at the frog and giving as much pain as possible to the frog. So the teacher went up to him and said to him, look, you were in the class when I told all these things and you heard everything. But why you do this? Why do you give pain to this poor animal? It hasn't done anything to you. It's just lying in the water on its own. Why are you doing this? You know what he answered? He says to the teacher, No, I understood fully what you said. In fact, in the last life, he threw stones at me. So I'm throwing now back at him. Do you know what this is? In Shastram, there is a word for this. It's called Anyadha Grahanam. Anyadha Grahanam means, a speaker says something, and you understand it exactly the opposite way. Exactly the opposite way. That is why, when Prabhupada said something, there is hundreds of commentaries on that now. 100 people with 100 opinions today. It's not very difficult when Prabhupada said certain things, but you can see some of the conclusions what people have come about with Prabhupada's instructions is this Anyadha Grahanam. It is called Anyadha Grahanam. Anyadha Grahanam means the speaker says something, Prabhupada said something, for example, but the person who heard that, he has misconstrued or misinterpreted or misunderstood in exactly the opposite way. And he will hold on to that and say, this is what Prabhupada said. This is called Anyadha Grahanam. And Shastra says, people who have this nature of Anyadha Grahanam, they will never understand the Guru Tattvam, the principle of Guru. They will never be able to understand. They'll go on like this, all the time misinterpreting things. And you keep on misinterpreting everything, and then you will see you are nowhere. At the end, everything will be a confusion. So, the speaker's duty is to speak truthfully and honestly. The listener has also a responsibility to learn it properly and understand it properly and not misinterpret things. This is an important thing. That's why it's mentioned there that the Anyadha Grahanam is a very serious problem. Agrahanam, Anyadha Grahanam, that is coming from Maya. Agrahanam means not understanding anything. Anyadha Grahanam means understanding in the opposite way. So as long as there is Anyadha Grahanam, it is very difficult that that the duty of the listener is to understand it properly. That is the duty of the listener. Duty of the speaker is to speak truthfully what he has actually properly understood, if he has understood properly. That's the duty of the speaker. And the duty of the listener is to understand it properly, not with Anyadha Grahanam. Anyadha Grahanam happens means that everything will be said. So many examples you can see in our own ISKCON's history, how Anyadha Grahanam has happened. Anyadha Grahanam has happened. I can give you so many examples, but it may develop into a problem, because sometimes when you say these things, people misunderstand that you are criticizing and it's a big offense, this, that and the other will come then. So we don't go into that. But you take your own time and think about this, that how Anyadha Grahanam affects people's way of thinking. And that Anyadha Grahanam has to go. Because these are not new things. It's been happening through time immemorial, all these things. One spiritual master, in fact, to tell you the truth, in Bhagavatam itself later on, an issue comes. What is the issue? Issue is this. Uddhava asks Krishna, you are telling me so many things now. And different times throughout the history, different sages have spoken different things. Yeah? What are they? Somebody says that, truthfulness is the most important thing. Another sage comes and says that truthfulness is not important. Charity is the most important thing. And the third person comes and says, charity is not the important thing. Being merciful to everyone is the most important thing. And they're all quoting the authority of the Vedas. Vedas are the authority. And they're all not ordinary people. They're all great, highly elevated people. Krishna, Uddhava says there, Vadandi Krishna Shreyamsi. Tell us, what is actually Shreyas means? they are all Brahmavadis, they are all Brahman realized personalities. And why are they saying little different things like this? And it's very confusing, Uddhava says to Krishna. At that time, Krishna had to put his feet down and say to Uddhava, Uddhava, the problem is this. Problem is not with me. I am the person who spoke all these things. The Vedas have come from me. And it is not the fault of the Vedas also. And whose fault is it? The people who have heard it. It's their fault it is. Why? Because the reason is this. He said, Vedas exist in all different spaces, isn't it? Demons also study Vedas. You know, Ramana and all are very learned in the Vedas. Hiranyakashipu was learned in the Vedas. You remember in the 7th canto when Hiranyakashipu talked about when Hiranyaksha was got killed, there is some few verses here. Hiranyakashipu going and instructing their mother not to feel hurt by the death of Hiranyaksha. And he says there, Hiranyakashipu is preaching Vedanta philosophy to his mother. So it's there. Similarly, Ravana was highly qualified in his knowledge. So they also follow Vedas. Brahmanas are also following Vedas. Forget about all this. Even in the other species like Kinnaras, Charanas, Gandharvas, and so on and so forth, there are so many different species, Gandharvas and Kinnaras, Charanas, Gandharvas, Apsaras and demigods, they all follow Vedas. They are all bound by Vedas. But they all understand it in a different way. So Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, it's not the fault of the Vedas, it's not my fault either. It's the fault of those who have heard it. They, according to their modes of nature and their vasanas, they will interpret in a different way in their own. It was at that point, Uddhava asked Krishna, Krishna, I don't want to hear what others have got to say. Tell me from your side what is the right thing to do. So that's when he continues further, Krishna talk goes on further from there. We'll come to that later. But it is a very important point to remember that when somebody is making a statement, it's not the statement what he exactly heard from the instructor or from where he studied or got it from. He will obviously mix that with his own perceptions and his own understanding. We'll come through that. And that you have to guard against. Because that is how these different versions have come about. Truthfulness, charity, mercifulness, dharmam, all sorts of things in the Vedic literature you will find. So Krishna is saying that is because of the cause behind it. Then, so our Yadu Maharaj, Yadu, and we are talking about Yadu and who? Yadu and Dattatreya Maharshi we are talking about. It's a very important discussion. Now, after finishing these five material elements, we now move on to the next two important spiritual masters. Who are they? One is the moon and next one is the sun. So, first we have finished now Prithvi, Vayura, Akasham, Apam, Agni, the five material elements finished. Chandrama and Ravi. Chandraman is moon and Ravi is the sun. So, Chandraman, what I have learned, that is the next spiritual master we are going to talk about. So, if you look into the Bhagavadam in the canto 11, chapter 7, you will find there that it is the verse number that now verse number 48. That's where we stopped, isn't it? So 47 was Somayaya Srishtamidam Sadasalakshanam Vibhum Pravishtamiyade tatal surubo agnirivaithasim. That tosamayaya srishtamidam. Then, all this creation in this world has come from the soul. Soul is behind everything. It is from the soul we have all come. This gross material body what we have, the different identities what we have, is nothing but the soul's manifestation in different forms. But which is the source behind it? It's the soul. Driving force is the soul. So he says here, in association with Maya, material nature, the soul has taken all these shapes in different forms of bodies. So he says here, Somayaya srishtamidam sadasal lakshanam vibhum Pravishtamiyade tatal sarubo agnirivaidhasi. I learned from fire this one important point. Just like the soul has entered into different bodies and taken that shape, and that shape has become prominent. For example, each one of us here, we all have a form and shape, isn't it? And that's become important for us now. Although this form is not the permanent identity with us, our permanent nature is the soul which has entered into all these different bodies. Exactly like this is what he learned from the fire. How fire enters to something and takes that shape. If it is a log of wood, it will take the size of a log of wood. If it's a refinery flow, it will take the size of the flow. It will flow like this. And if it is a wheel, which is covered in cloth, dipped in petrol or kerosene or something, it will take the shape of the wheel. So, alada chakram. In the Bhagavatam, that word is used, alada chakram. So, whichever shape it takes depends on the... It doesn't matter. Whatever shape it takes, the soul can enter and take that shape in whichever way. Exactly like the fire does. Fire can take any shape depending on the medium through which it comes out. That's what I've learned from the fire. Just see the deeper side of the analysis. How he is always fixed on the spiritual understanding, spiritual platform. This is how that spiritual knowledge gets established inside. Otherwise, all the time, if we think about matter, what will happen? That's why we say that constantly associating with matter will not develop spiritually. We'll become like matter, very much dead matter will become. Like sitting in front of the television, watching this television, no interaction with another living being. What will happen? We'll become like another television character inside. And same thing with computer. All these things are like that. They're not meant for... Okay, for livelihood you have to do all these things. But at the same time, if you do not cut it off at some point and come to this Bhagavatam points, what Bhagavatam is making, we can lose that spiritual understanding of life, and even our spiritual consciousness will be killed. We'll lose that spiritual nature in us. We won't understand what's... Then like a dead matter will live in this world, like a dead body, although living, but dead, as good as dead. So that's what it's saying here. That samayaya sashtamidam sarasal lakshanam vibhu pravishtamiyade tatal sarubogniri vaithasi. Next one, 48. Visargadya shmashananda bhavadehasena almana kalanamiva chandrasya kalena avyaktavarpana. Kalena avyaktavarpana. This is a very important one. Why? The moon, that's the next one. What have I learned from the moon? He is saying here. Every day Dattatreya Maharshi is walking along and he is looking at the moon and he is looking at the moon and he is thinking about the soul. What did he say? He saw that the moon day after day it was waning. The moon was waning. And eventually it came to the most thin form, just a line in the sky. And he kept observing this moon for at least 1 month he must have observed. And he realized at the end of that, then the moon started getting bigger and bigger and the full moon at the end. So this waxing and waning of the moon, he noticed it and he started thinking, what a great lesson am I learning from this? This is such an important lesson for me. In my body also, you see, already he is in an elevated consciousness, he is thinking, what's happening to this body? His body is going on. As a little boy, one day I remember running around as a little boy, 4-5 years old. Where's that body gone? And before I know, it has grown up. I come to my teenager's life. And then I can't remember that now. I come to my youthful age. So body has all gone. Is it not similar to this, what's happening to this moon? He started thinking like this. Exactly like the way what's happened to the moon, it's happening to me also. So where is the difference? He said. This is only lesson I can learn is this, that body is changing, the moon is changing. And as much as the moon is losing its size and becoming thinner and thinner, similarly my body has grown big, big, big first, and then it starts getting thinner and thinner, and one day it has gone away from me. Already he has separated himself from the body in that way, in that process. So he's asking this question here, that is this not, is this good for me? Is this not important for me to understand this? Because normally what does people do? People, generally I'm talking about, when a child is born, we all feel happy in the house, isn't it? We all feel happy in the house. Child is growing and we feel more happy. And we are always absorbed in this thought. But, if you study what the Dattatreya Maharshi has got to tell us, we are not supposed to think like that. The so-called happiness what we get from all this child's birth and child's growth and child's happiness is nothing but a product of Maya. So that is important point he is driving at. He is saying here that when the children are playing and feeling happy, we will also feel happy. And when they go to the boyhood, youthhood, like that, they keep progressing in their life, then ultimately they experience death. They experience death. If you look at the verse 48, he says there that visargadya shmashananda, that all what is visargadya shmashanam andaha. Visarga means the birth and shmashanam is the cemetery, the death. So first the birth and then the death. First the birth and the death. Visargadya shmashananda bhavo dehasya nalpana. It is only for the deham, only for the body this is happening. Nothing to do with me. Nahasya na almana, not for the soul. So then what happens? And the journey starts when the birth happens, isn't it? When you are born, the journey starts. Journey continues and ends in the cemetery at the end, shmashanam, or where the journey ends. And then the journey begins in another womb. In another womb, the journey begins. And again it ends in another cemetery. And then again the journey begins in another womb. Is that not what life is? He is asking there. Looking at the moon, he has come to this conclusion. And just like, but he realized that the moon doesn't die. Moon doesn't die. Only it was changing its body all the time, but nothing was happening with the soul. So there was no change happening to the soul, but the change was happening in the body for the moon. There was nothing was happening to the soul for the moon, but it was happening to the body of the moon. So this realization I got, and I started looking at my own body, and I realized that the change is only happening to the body, not to me. Change is only happening to the body and not to me. So by observing the moon, he has understood this point that that everything what we see here, we are seeing through Maya's eyes, through illusion. That is why we get a different perception of everything. And wiping out Maya from our vision is what the Dattatreya Maharshi is doing here. So in this example he said that visargadya shmashananda bhava dehasya nalpana, not for the body, not for the soul. Kalanam iva chandrasya kale avyakta varpana. Time is the thing that is doing this. Subject to time, kalena ishara, we say here, kalena, kalanam iva chandrasya. The chandra, the moon, is changing. Kalena avyakta varpana. Avyakta varpana. That means this transformation that's happening to the body is subject to time. Nothing to do with me, the soul. So, a very important lesson he has learned from the moon. We have also seen the moon for so many years, isn't it? What have we learned? We learned what? We learned how to go there. That's what we learned, isn't it? This is our so-called developed brain telling us how to get there. And then so many projects, so many billions. So, you see, this is the difference between a spiritual understanding and material understanding of life. Material understanding means gross dead knowledge, dead matter. Doesn't help at all. But spiritual understanding means subtle, more subtle and more subtle. And a person who has trained his mind to think in this direction will never be captivated by all this show going on in the scientific world, It has no attraction for them because they know it's all very, very gross activities. That's what's happening. So that you will see in the next verse what Krishna, Yathatatrayama says, Kalena Hyokhavegena Bhudanam Prabhavapyayo Nityavavina Adrishyede Atmane Agni Yatharchisham. Atmane Agni Yatharchisham. That these are looks very simple, but only if you think about it, you will understand the importance of these verses. What he's saying here, that in this verse, if you look at it, he says here that kalenehyo akhavekhena bhudhanam prabhavapyayo nityavabhinan drishyede atmano agni yatharchisham. Say you have lighted one lamp, say a candle, I have lighted and kept it here. I lighted a candle and kept it here. You look at the candle and what will you say? You will say, oh, the candle is burning very nicely. My lamp is coming out. This is the our vision, our sight of that. But what does the verse say? Verse is saying that if you look at the candle, actually what's happening it is dying. That's actually what's happening, isn't it? In a few minutes or an hour, the candle will get finished. Candle will die. In other words, the dying process has already started. The moment you have lighted the lamp, the dying process has started. But we don't see the dying process. We see the, oh, it's burning very well, we say. Similarly, when we see a child taking birth, first thing we have to recognize is the death has started. That's the first thing we have to recognize. Otherwise, we have not understood that birth properly. This is the point he is making here. And he says here, Kalino akhavegena bhudanam prabhavapyayo. The power of time is such, in such a fast space, this time is moving. And under the influence of this time, this change is happening to the body. Isn't it? In the influence of time, the change is happening to the body. But we, somehow or the other, we don't take notice of that. By whatever reason you may call it, we don't take notice of it. What do? We think, I'm still living, isn't it? That itself is a big thing. That's how we look at it. But imagine all of us here, how much we have changed from our childhood till now. How many times we have left, changed the body, and the process of this so-called final death has already begun the day we were got this human body. It has started at that point. But never it strikes our head to think like that. Does it? What do? I'm only 50 now. I've got another good 20 years to go. So what an illusion it is. This is what the Tathagata Maharshi is talking about. The Tathagata Maharshi is saying here that if you don't see things in this way, you will not get that spiritual vision to study this world and to capture the message from this world. This is why Ekadasha Skandam is so important. It changes our way of looking at things. So it says here, Kalena Hyogavegena Bhudhanam Prabhavapyayo Vidya Nityavavina Drishyede Atmano Agne Yatharchisham. An example is given. You go to Haridwar or elsewhere, for example. A river is flowing. And you stand in next to the river and you look at the river flowing. And you say, oh, Ganga River is flowing very nicely. Which part of Ganga River are you talking about? The water you have spoken about now, that's already on its way to the Ganga Sagar to join the Bay of Bengal. It's on its way. Before you know it, has mixed, merged there. Another quantity of water has come from Himalayas, the next. And before you can say anything, it's gone, the next one has come. Although it is going on like this continuously, whom are you referring to Ganga here? Which part of Ganga? That's gone already. So what does it mean? It means that to our eyes we are seeing that it is there, it exists. But in reality, it doesn't exist. Nothing is existing there. It's gone. It's gone, what we are talking about. This is why all this spiritual knowledge is to be present, has to be based today. Past has no value. Past is memory. Gone. No point. It is kind of like the reverse flow. But we give too much importance to the past. We thinking that from past we have so much to learn, I believe. What's there to learn from the past? Nothing to learn from the past. Similarly, about the future. You may be thinking about future, what will happen. So most of the time, the mind is oscillating between past and the future. Past and the future. Shastras are telling us, forget about the past, forget about the future, live in the present. This is the most important thing. Because what you do today, present, that is what counts at the end. That's what counts at the end. Because that's all there for you. Nothing else to go with you in your spiritual effort. So, this is why it says there, Kalena Hyoka Vegena Bhudhanam Prabhavapeyo Nitya Vabi Na Drishyete Atmano Agni Etharchisham. Atmano Agni Etharchisham. He says here that just like the powerful flood or storm, it comes. That because of the powerful of time, the time is another entity which we can't see it properly, but it comes, it works. Under influence of that, that although six kinds of transformation of the body, which you have, which you know what it means, that means the it takes birth, it starts growing, it starts giving byproducts, then it stays for some time, decay and death. This is called Shat Parinama Vedam, the six kinds of transformation that happens in the body. So all these things are happening with the soul in the background. With the soul in the background. But we take these six things, we are seeing this and we acting as though we are not seeing it. Nothing happens to us. So that's what he's saying here. That it, although it's all happening, because the space at which it's happening, we unlike the when the firewood is burning, just like the flame is dying down, exactly like the way the body is also dying off. But we are not taking notice of it. That's what Krishna is saying here. So it is an important thing to make train our mind to think in this way also, because this is the reality, what Krishna is saying. Unless, if we think like this, what will happen is, our mind will withdraw from the external world. This is the advantage of doing that. This is the internal reflection. When we say looking inwards, means this is how you look inwards. These are the symptoms of a person who looks inwards. Symptoms of a person who looks outwards is what he will talk like the way we talk about everything. We'll say that, oh, I got another 20, 30 years to live. I got my pension to get. These are all the people who look outwards. The one who look inwards will always see things in this way. Me, the consciousness, is not dying. It exists all the time. I'll give you some examples to that later. So, once you come to that understanding, your understanding of the body is changing. So far, I have identified with my body all along my life. And I've noticed that this body is experiencing so many changes in this process. But today I can see that when Krishna is saying these things and I'm taking it seriously, I can understand what Krishna is making the point. Krishna is saying that when you start understanding that you're not this body, the changes in the body, you can notice it better. When you understand that you are not this body and your identification with the soul is stronger, you can notice, stand apart from the body and see the changes that's happening in the body. Otherwise you won't notice it. If all the time you are thinking that I am this body, then you will never notice the change that's happening in the body. But let's come to that little bit more deeper. When this understanding comes in a person's mind, Krishna is saying there, when this understanding comes in a person's mind, what will happen? That's what the next few verses are talking about. So, Krishna is saying this, that if you have understood this point clearly, you will notice that the body can leave you any moment. Because you are constantly observing the body, seeing the changes that's happening in the body, the problems that's coming to the body, different illnesses and different treatments, what you have done, nothing is working and it's still driving in the wrong way. So, at that point you can see that the body will one day is going to leave you. And when the body leaves, at that point, your understanding will also be different. You see, this is all what Parikshit has done. Parikshit didn't do any other research. Parikshit changed his way of looking at things when Sudeva Goswami spoke about it. That everything was there in front of him, and he was also noticing that the sign, that the body is what is changing. What is changing. Then, and in order to understand this, somebody tells us that death is very close. Any moment you can die now. We won't take it seriously, would we? Why we don't take it seriously? Have you thought about this? Why we don't take death seriously? There's a reason behind it. You see, sometimes somebody tells you, look, you got another probably 6 months to live. Somebody, you got some illness or something, and some doctor tells you got 6 months to live or something. And still, it's not hitting you, isn't it? It doesn't hit you. Why is that? Why is that doesn't hit you? It's a very interesting point. The reason for that is, in your inside, the soul knows you're not this body. The knowledge is already there. This is what I was saying before, that realization of the self has to happen today, now. It is not something that will come to you after practicing Krishna consciousness 50 years. No, it has to happen today. Why? Because this knowledge that I am not this body is already there inside. That is why when somebody tells you that you are going to die in 6 months' time, you won't take it seriously. Why? Because you know you won't die. The body will die. But it's all mixed up at the moment with the body and the soul. This is the current situation with us. Everything is mixed up. We are not completely sure we are the soul. We are not completely sure we are not the body. This is our consciousness. And when everything is mixed up like this, but inside somewhere, there is an understanding that it's only the body that is dying, not me. That is why you're not getting frightened of this warning. Otherwise, if you know that you are the body very clearly, and if you know you're going to die in 6 months' time, your mood will not be like this. You will try anything and everything to protect the body. Not only that, when an older person is approaching closer to death, if you observe that person very seriously, you will notice now and then they are ready to leave the body. Have you noticed that? They will always show the symptoms of that in their interactions with others. I'll give you an example. Sometimes a grandmother at home, an older person, she has lived with the family for many years, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all that. And at some point, she has feeling more realistic about death, closer to death. At that point, her interest in the children and grandchildren will start coming down. Why is that? Reason for that is, she knows already the message is coming that I have to leave this body. This connection with all other people was through this body. Even to that extent, it gets clearer. This is not from Shastram. This is a natural phenomenon happens to people. Not from Shastram. They have not studied Shastram, all these people. But natural way, Krishna is giving, sending that signal to them to prepare for death. But even then, they are not lamenting. They are in a rush to leave the body. They want to leave. Why? Because all this happiness they were getting from this body is finished. And the body has become more or less like a burden. So that time they start thinking, I had enough of this now. Let me move on. And that preparation, so what it is mean? It means that spiritual realization is already inside us. It's already there. The only thing is, we have not recognized it. This is the problem we have got. That I am not this body, this understanding is already there. If you see some of the statements from the acharyas about it, how they are begging us to accept this statement from Shastram without questioning anymore. They are saying, do you need any more proof than this? They are asking this question. And still, we will check with science whether it's right or not. This is us. That Acharya Swamiji says about this in one of the stotrams, he says like this, he says that that Shruti, Mother Shruti, Shruti Mother means Vedas. She is addressed as Mother because she is the knowledge, isn't it? Mother gives the knowledge. Shruti Mother has affection for her children more than hundreds and thousands of mothers who have given birth to a child. Just like our mother who has given birth to this body, she has some attachment to our body. To our mother has some attachment to our body. And she gives so much, makes so much sacrifice and gives so much pleasure to us in order to look after us. She makes so much sacrifice. Ajari Swamiji says that Mother Shruti Mother, she is much more magnanimous than your actual mother to give you this understanding of your real identity of the soul. She does not want you to lose this understanding that you are not this body, rather you are the soul. How much effort she is putting in through Upanishads, through Puranas, through what is the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam is only this at the end, that I am not this body which I am thinking. And that is how Parikshit, got out of the trouble at the end, isn't it? I was mentioning this before. If you go into Parikshit's instructions in the Bhagavatam, Parikshit's realizations at the last minute, kindly go home and read that in the Canto 12, Chapter 5. It is the point when Parikshit realized fully. And the realized state how he spoke, 12 or 13 verses there. In that 13 verses, if you reflect, you will find something very interesting. What is Parikshit saying there? Parikshit is saying there that death is for the body, not for me. Death is for the body, not for me. And Bhagavatam is preparing us to bring us to that point, to get there. And if you have got that point, you are studying Bhagavatam is successful, your spiritual life is successful, everything what you have done in this world is successful. If you have not got to that point, then everything what you have done in this world is completely waste of time. Nothing you have got at the end. This is simple. The answer is very simple. Srimad Bhagavatam has only one goal to tell us, one point to tell us. When we come to 12th Canto, Chapter 5, we will discuss that more. But important point here is that there is no such thing called birth. There is no such thing called death as far as the soul is concerned. Due to the influence of the modes of nature, and under the influence of three modes of nature, material nature provides the body based on the law of karma and the parabdham it comes. And it will leave you also when the right time comes. So it is this realization that has to come to us from Krishna. Krishna has to give us this understanding. So here, in this particular example, if you see there, another example, because examples can help. Sometimes have you noticed some people go to church or temple and they will pray to say to the deity or to the Lord that I am such a sinful person and please forgive me for all my sins. I will not repeat these sins again. Kind of, what do they call it? Confession. They make at the church, they make at the temple also. In the church they do it on a regular basis, but in the temple individuals come and do that. They have committed some serious sinful activities. As soon as he comes out of the church or the temple, suppose you heard these prayers in the temple room when he was praying. When he comes out, you call him and tell him, you're such a sinful person you are. You tell him like that. Do you know what he will do? He will ask you, who says I am sinful? He will ask you this question, who says I am sinful? He says, I am such a noble soul. I'm such a pure person. Why is that? Why does he say like that? Reason is this. Even the greatest sinful person in this world, he knows inside that the sinful activity, what he has performed, has nothing to do with his actual identity. The soul has nothing to do with it. All these sinful reactions, karmam, all this parabdham, whatever we are talking about, is all in relationship with the mind, with the senses, with the intelligence, with the body. Nothing to do with the soul. So, whenever there is a glimpse of this spiritual realization that I am the soul, automatically your vision of the world, your experience of the world, everything changes. And that is always there in everyone. That is the most interesting thing. We all know that. But unfortunately, it's all mixed up with the body, mind and senses, everything. And therefore, it's not coming out clearly. So all what we are doing now through studying Srimad Bhagavatam and the devotees, this ignorance that has come in, you have to throw it away. That's all it is. There is not new knowledge that has to come from outside. It's already there existing in everyone. If you remember some of the statements from Prabhupada, will say, every living entity by nature is a devotee. He says many times, we are all Krishna conscious living entities, he says. But due to association with matter, this has happened. It is not the original state. We are thinking, oh, I have to study Bhagavatam for 20 years, and then after that I'll chant 64 rounds for 10 years, and then I will take a spiritual master, and then he will give me some engagement, and then I will become self-realized. We have these kind of plans in our head, working. Many people have got these plans. It's not like that spiritual life. Spiritual life never works like that. Spiritual life is right here today, accepting what Krishna has spoken, and that's your spiritual realization begins from that point. It's only a question of getting established in that throughout, then you are perfectly realized after that. Sometimes, due to the effect of the material nature, we are not able to experience that. Because so much it is mixed up with everything, we find it difficult. So, important point what Krishna is saying here is this, that that try to understand that you are not the body, the shariram or material body, what you are sitting inside, you don't sit in the body. You are the soul. The body sits on you. You don't sit on the body. We are always identifying that I'm sitting in this body, isn't it? It's not true. Body sits on me. That is a proper perception, correct perception. Body sits on me. Body will go one day and I'll go my way. So that's clear definition or clear demarcation is, understanding is necessary. Otherwise, spiritual realization is not possible. This is a very ABC of spiritual life. If this point has not clicked inside, then it may take a very, very long time to come to some understanding of spiritual life. This is a very basic of spiritual life. You'll see here that that everything what you are experiencing in this world, so for example, disease, death, old age, and different stages, that's all in the mind only. It's not with the soul. Soul is not experiencing youth. Soul is not experiencing the old age. Soul is not experiencing the death either. Who is experiencing then? The mind is experiencing that. Isn't it? So, if you give importance to the mind and thinking that what mind is saying is the truth, who has to be blamed? This is what Krishna is saying here. If this simple point clicks first in our head, then life becomes a lot more spiritual. Otherwise, it's on a mental platform or on a bodily platform, what we are talking. For hundreds of years, we can stand and talk about spiritual life, but it may not happen. The result may not come. That's the point. That if it is not understood, if you are not captured this point, you are still in the nursery class. That's what it's saying. That's what Krishna is saying. That that so for see, for example, say you meet a 90-year-old person outside, 90-year-old, and throughout life he has been messing around with different things, and he has come to this old age now. So out of compassion, you tell him, look, why don't you come and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam for at least for an hour at this age in life? He says to you, look, I'm not ready yet. He's telling you like that. I'm not ready yet. Because you know what has happened. There's an economic crisis. The shares are dropping. FTSE index is dropping. So I have to first sort that out and I'll come after that. Why does he say that? Why does he say that? You should think also, why is he saying like that? There's a reason. The reason is this. He knows the body will die. He knows. He's aware of that. But still, I will live. That I will live. I. My existence, which is called consciousness, he is conscious of. Of his existence, he is conscious of. So even though the body may drop, he is not convinced that he is not going to exist. That from inside, that realization will naturally come. That's why he is not willing to come to the Bhagavatam class. That's the reason for that. Many people, you will notice this if you talk to them, you will understand that they will start thinking how stupid it is that even at this age they want to carry on with this today or tomorrow, they're waiting. Why don't they do something about it? The reason why they're not taking it is this. That inside that spiritual, not that they're self-realized, not for that reason, but inside the soul has showing its potency and saying to them that you will live forever, you don't die. You don't die, you live forever. So some glimpse of that keeps coming, and particularly at the old age, this happens. If you remember, I talked about three types of bodies, isn't it? Sthulam, Sushmam, Karanam. These are the gross body, subtle body, and the causal body. Now, out of these three bodies, for a baby, the causal body is stronger, is very big. And is there, everything is stored up, the whole secret of the life is there. As the baby is growing, as you can see, the baby is sleeping for a long period of time. When all these files are getting transferred from the causal body folder into the subtle body folder. And the subtle body start growing. Subtle body start growing. This subtle body, as it starts growing, the causal body starts dying. And one day, the causal body will virtually disappear. And that is the reason when they get very old, they don't even get sleep. So when we are very old, which you will all be very soon, when you get there, if you're not getting sleep, don't take sleeping pills. There is no need. It's a nature's arrangement is like that. You don't need to sleep at the old age. So at that time, wake up, chant the holy name, or think about Srimad Bhagavatam statements properly. And that will keep you awake. When the sleep comes, you sleep. When you don't get sleep, you don't have to think that, oh, I am sick, I'm not getting sleep. I've not had my 8 hours sleep today, so I am sick. And jump into all these wrong conclusions. No, it's wrong, because material nature, by its arrangement, it has kept us like this. Once you cross 50, 60 like that, the number of hours you sleep will also go less. Because bodily needs are changing. The subtle body is growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And the causal body is dying. When you have a big causal body, you sleep long hours without any problem. That's why baby is able to sleep. And the gross body, one day, once its purpose is finished, according to the Prarabdham is over, it will drop. It will go. So the gross body will drop and go away. The causal body will die on its own. But at the time of death, you have got this big savings, fixed deposit in this, in the form of this subtle body. If you can kill this subtle body, that is called liberation. That's all liberation means. When you kill this subtle body by Krishna consciousness, the subtle body is killed, then you are liberated. You are freed from material life once for all. The cycle is over. Birth and death is finished. This is the whole science behind the transmigration of the soul. Causal body will die on its own. Old age doesn't mean that you have to sleep for many hours. It's not necessary. If you get sleep, you sleep. But if you're not getting sleep, you don't have to feel concerned about it. Because by nature's arrangement, the subtle body is growing bigger and bigger all the time. And it is full of thoughts inside. What normally happens, have you seen these old people? They have this nature of sitting. When I say old people, all of us also, not that we are all young. Old people sit and they'll always be thinking. Thinking. What are they thinking about? Balastaval kreda sakta. At the childhood, how they played. Tarunastaval taruni sakta. When you are young, how I was searching after the partner. Vriddhastaval chindasakta. Vriddha, when you become old age, all these activities stops. What? Playing with the football or looking for the partner. That's all finished. Chindasakta, all the time thinking. Thinking. Thinking about what? Pare brahmani kopi nasakta. Nobody has interest in Krishna. These thoughts only goes on all the time. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is saying that understand the science, how these three different bodies, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. See, this Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. What is Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti? It's nothing like this. If you look at... Jagrat state, Suppose you have a cage. If you go to the zoo, you will see this. Sometimes, a cage, a long cage, it will have three sections, two or three sections. And one tiger, you will see walking from one end to the other end. There will be a door in the middle, he'll go to the second section, to the third section. And then when he's hungry, he will walk back again. To the back again. So, this way, that way he'll be backing back and forth. Have you noticed this? If you've gone to zoo, you will see this. Lions, tigers, they give them big space. Not only that, when they feed them, they will close one door and they will put the meat in one section and allow the open that section, and then the tiger can come from the other side and eat the food. So like this, there are sections like that, isn't it? Three sections or four sections you'll find. Similarly, similarly, the soul is moving through Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti in the same way. Back and forth, back and forth. Exactly like the tiger is moving within the cage from one end to the another and back here. That's all what soul is doing. These three cages, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. The waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep. In these three states, the soul is running back and forth. That's our life in this world. Nothing more than that. Nothing more than that. If you have got this point, and if you develop on this further, you will notice that in Jagrat, what I experienced, in the dream state, what I experienced, in the deep sleep, what I experienced, although they are different, they are not connected to each other. My experiences in Jagrat is one, experiences in dream is another one, experiences in sleep is another one. But one thing is very clear to me, the person who was experiencing all these things are still there. I am still there. When I was in Jagrat, I was there. In dream, I was there. In deep sleep, I was there. How come I am a witness to everything, but nothing is sticking to me? I am taking and leaving it. As and when I go into particular state of consciousness, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, I take the things what I want at that particular time only, and then I leave it there, and then I go into the next mode. An older person, he has had his album at home. In that album, he had kept all his photos from childhood. When he was a child, while he was playing, his parents had given the photos, he put that in. Then when he grew up, as a teenager, how he wandered around in the school, college, all that. He photographs of that. Then his youth, when he was working somewhere, in some jobs, what he was doing, photographs from that time. Then when he got older, family man, family photograph. Like this, he has collected the photos all through his life and put it in this album. When he got very old, say 85, 90 years old, one day, he took all these photos and started looking at it. While looking at those photos, his grandchild comes to him and says to him, "Granddad, who is this? Whose photo is this?" So granddad says to him, "Look, that's me. That's me." Showing the childhood of his childhood in the photograph. He's showing to his grandchild and saying to him, "That's me," he says. So the grandchild is asking, "It doesn't look like you." The grandchild is saying to the granddad, "It doesn't look like you." But the grandfather is saying, "Well, I have not changed. The body has changed. I'm old man now. But I was like that at one time. But who is that I then? Who has not changed?" So that knowledge has followed him when he was a child, even right up to the old age, that I am different than all these bodies what I have changed through. Isn't it? So from this you can see, Krishna has put this knowledge inside us, that I am not this body. But due to this mix-up with the mind, the senses, and the intelligence and everything, we have somehow or the other fallen into trap of this, that I am this body. This is what has happened. All what is required is directly accept this understanding without questioning from these examples and stick to that platform and study Ekadasha Skandham. Everything will be clear. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.